We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome into this edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast, Blue Sky, sort of live here with you, Chase Palm, Brian Rippey joining you, a little bit of a different deal here, no streams first couple days of the week. That is because I'm out working on something. Brian, nice enough to help me out here, and it is Sunday morning around 10:45 as we are recording right now, so just be aware of that as we talk today. Anything that happens after that will have to be a different podcast or something that we had no way to anticipate. As of right now, the Rebels and the Bulldogs splitting the series one game to one game. They play at 1:30 p.m. today. So again, just that. That's not really what we're talking about today. We're going to get some spring game stuff, the Grove Bowl games, and then we're going to get into Mike Bieco's contract situation a little bit here with you today. So that's coming up on the show, but just giving you a heads up so you're aware of what's going on. We appreciate you as always, as does the Blue Sky. Blue Skies all over Mississippi. I've been at I-55 throughout North Mississippi as well. They take care of you. Convenience stores, clean convenience stores. Get some gas, lunch specials, tons of inventory, stuff, a lot of stuff going on there. Wherever you are in Mississippi, there is a Blue Sky nearby. I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900, Highway 25 South. There in Amory. Corey told us last week he's got more inventory than he has in a long time. So give him a call. Let him be your truck guy. Let him be your car guy, and he will help you out. And then, as always, the Campbell Clinic Hotline. Brian joining us on the Campbell Clinic Hotline. They are now in Oxford. Call them for all your orthopedic needs there on Lamar in Oxford. So, again, that's the Campbell Clinic Hotline for that. Brian, You talked to Laquan Treadwell on Friday. Speaking of Blue Sky, they were the main sponsor, the primary sponsor, the title sponsor, whatever you want to call it, for the event where the documentary that you've been talking about for a while, the premiere was shown there at Back Nine in Oxford. Did a podcast with Treadwell. Treadwell announcing some stuff with Hyperlux as well. So just another little quick thank you to Blue Sky as we get going.
Yeah, it was a good event. I thought they had a good turnout. I've never emceed anything in my life, but we got through it. And I thought it turned out pretty well. The documentary, I thought, was pretty good, or really good, I should say. They've, I know, spent a lot of months and a lot of hard work on that. And good seeing Laquan again. Seems like a good partnership. He loves to play Call of Duty. They're a gaming platform, so it seems to make sense all around.
Yeah, you get up there. I mean, I'm kind of with you. I mean, I've done some MC stuff, but at least sometimes, most time, you have some prep. You just kind of got handed the mic and a beer and said, "Hey, we're going to do some Q&A now. Go ahead, have at it."
Yeah, a mic that kept turning off and on at the same time as well. So we had to battle that. We were passing around one microphone between the three of us, but we made it work. It was a great event, regardless. But yes, for the first time MCing something, it was not the smoothest road the whole time, but, you know, we got through it regardless. Laquan made it easy. Jake answered questions well, too. So could have been worse for sure.
Yeah, it's one of those deals. It's kind of like a car wreck in a way, and anybody who has not been up there is not completely going to understand. But if you that mic goes out, even if it's out for 5 seconds, it feels like 9.5 minutes while you're trying to turn that thing back on. Like, time just stops, and you think you're the bumbling idiot, even though it's just a technology problem with that mic not working. It's a mess.
Yeah, at least I had Cody. He was nice enough up there to, like, hit the microphone and pretend like it was maybe partially his fault it wasn't working, instead of me just standing there being like, why doesn't this thing work? So we had a team effort trying to get that thing back up to functionality.
So let's talk about Grove Bowl games for a second. Neil wrote about it. You can find that column there at rebelgrove.com. And we're going to be echoing the same sentiments, and you and I have not discussed, so maybe you differ, but I doubt it. That was a home run yesterday. It's a thing where the spring games in general are stale. They don't matter. Lane Kiffin finally, you know, said the quiet part out loud that you're not getting any evaluation. You're doing it a little bit for fans, and now you're trying to head off the portal and the depth charts and all those different things as you make those decisions. And they turned that into a spectacle yesterday that people will remember more than any other type of spring game you could have had in the past. I don't think that the entire country is going to move to that next year, but some will. Some will copy elements. There'll be some hybrid parts of that thing yesterday. It was just a really cool, neat event to make something out of what was frankly monotonous and obligatory in years past. Going into this thing, you have Joey Chestnut coming out. He ends up eating 20 hot dogs in 90 seconds there at the end to take that title. The fraternity and the sorority members held up well in the hot dog competition against the football players. I was kind of impressed with that. You got tug of war, you got obstacle course, you're playing some 7-on-7, playing some flag football. No injuries. Lane Kiffin said, what are the two goals? No injuries and no injuries. They got that out of Saturday. I mean, it was one of those deals where you go into it, and I don't know if skeptical was the word. I just didn't know how they were going to play it all out and what it was going to look like and how you sort of implement it. And when they got done, I went, yeah, you sort of hit a home run just doing things on the fly and what that looks like. And that generated far more eyeballs from a TV standpoint, from a social media standpoint, and frankly, inside your program with players being excited than anything could have done playing some typical normal spring game.
Yeah, I do agree. I thought it was very smart. I was very curious to see how the whole thing played out. I didn't go. We had a couple people over to watch the Masters late in the afternoon, but someone I work with took her younger brother to the event, and I was kind of just asking how it was going because I was curious to see how it'd be presented. Could they actually make it pretty fun and engaging for fans? And it sounds like, by all accounts, they hit a home run in doing that. I thought it was creative. I thought the fact that they just kind of said to hell with the traditional spring game was funny. It's not shocking to me that Lane Kiffin was really the first coach to do that. There's also a piece of this too, right? If he had his choice, they wouldn't have to do anything, right? Don't they have to have something on for television purposes? Is that correct?
They had a two-hour window to fill per SEC, per conference office, per ESPN. And, I mean, and nobody's willing to just completely kill it. So, yeah. You had to do something to fill that time slot. But, I mean, you're given complete, autonomy to fill it with whatever you want. And, I mean, that's what's hilarious about it to me is Lane Kiffin just DM'd Joey Chestnut and said, hey, What do you think? And he laughed yesterday. I mean, Lane said, look, I had one other idea that they said no to, so I'm just shooting some shots here.
I loved it. I mean, it was he had a good quote earlier in the week where he was like, how did you get Joey Chestnut? He's like, just like any other kid does these days. I DM'd him on Twitter. But I thought it was really well done. It was perfect weather day, which always helps everything. But by the end of it, I was getting some photos from the event and kind of seeing some stuff on social media. And then I don't know what it was, but seeing Chestnut yammed 20 hot dogs in 90 seconds was actually the tipping point. It made me wish I would have gone. I don't really know why. Just seeing that spectacle, I was like, damn, I wish I'd have gone and seen this. So I thought it was a home run as well. I do think other programs will copy this next year, or at least elements of it. I just can't see how in this modern day and age. I mean, Arkansas had a running back play the spring game yesterday and immediately hit the portal. I just can't see how the trend continues of actual like spring games with any sort of scrimmages over the next 5 years. It just doesn't make any sort of coherent sense to do going forward.
You're only harming yourself. You're only creating something where no matter what, a quarterback goes out there first, a running back goes out there first, a left tackle goes out there first, and 2 days later, because it's been on TV, coaches from around the country tampering and calling that athlete and going, hey, you weren't the left guard there, bud. You could be the left guard here. Hey, portal opens tomorrow. Literally, portal opens tomorrow, April 15th. Hey, come on down. I mean, it's it's nonsensical. I mean, it's what Lane continues to say is, hey, it's a really dumb system. And at some point, you have to adapt to that system. You know, and look, it's why, I mean, we're going to sit here and I'm going to talk about the success of it from eyeballs, from a lack of injury, from a lack of helping people out from a portal standpoint. All those things are where the home runs are. There is no actual football take at all. There is zero football take to take from that in any way. And the only thing I will say is I thought Chris Paul looked pretty good running around in coverage. That's all I got. I got literally one take right now, and that's it, Brian. I went to the FCA breakfast yesterday morning, then got back, did that, and then went over to baseball afterwards. But I made sure I had it on. I had, like, the Masters on the TV, and then I had the Grove Bowl on the other screen. And, like, I followed the whole thing, no problems.
I don't know how to gauge what the reason I ask, I don't know how to gauge what, like, Grove Bowl or, like, spring game crowds are these days. You know, 10 years ago, it used to be a thing just to brag about how many tickets were sold or how many people were at your spring game. But, boy, that was a long time ago, it seems like now. But it seemed like they had a pretty good crowd for the most part. It looked like a lot of people were in the student section. I don't know if those were students, but it looked like it was a pretty good turnout. I remember some of the last ones I covered in the Matt Luke era, not to be rude, but were pretty depressing. I could have gone and counted the people that were sitting in the stands those days. Also remember a couple of those being earlier in the calendar and it being a little bit worse weather, but it looked like all in all a pretty good crowd yesterday and a pretty good turnout.
Yeah, no, I mean, no issues there from whatsoever. I thought that given the day and what you're competing against, because, you know, yesterday you're going to be competing against the weather. It was a really nice day out in Oxford. You got people who are going to go to the baseball game, try to stay at the baseball game. You got restaurants. You got all this stuff going on, including Mississippi Day yesterday. There was just a lot of students and prospective students that were in town, I guess I should say. So, you know, look, the Grove Bowl is this centerpiece, but at the same time, you had to want to go for sort of the shock value entertainment of it as much as anything else yesterday as far as, you know, seeing the guys. And, I mean, you got to see you get to see the new transfer portal dudes in, like, shorts and T-shirts. But that's about it for the afternoon on that one. Then Joey Chestnut throws out the first pitch at baseball last night as well. It wasn't bad. It wasn't a great first pitch. I give him credit for at least being on the mound. You get a lot of extra credit for not stepping in front of the mound and doing it that way and throwing it at 48 feet. So it was not hot dog eating prowess for Chestnut, but it was not bad. He was pretty good at it.
Is it reasonable to expect him to be able to throw a baseball if he just ate 20 hot dogs in 90 seconds? Like, I feel like the rest of the day you're...
God doesn't bless us in everything, right, Brian? So, like...
I mean, a buddy and I last night were talking about it, and we just did some, like, quick math on the couch of, like, he ate 70-something hot dogs in the last hot dog eating contest. That's a little under 12,000 calories, and you're getting it in, like, 8 minutes. Like, what, I don't, what do you throw that back up? What do you do the rest of the day? I can't imagine you're ready to go, like, run a marathon or anything like that. I guess this is a mini version of that. I'm just curious,
I think people
expect him to throw a baseball.
I think 20 is probably such child's play for him that's not even in the realm of needing to recover. I mean, that's a walk in the park. I mean, he mentioned that, you know, he's obviously got Coney Island coming up on 4th of July. That's when it always is. And I think he said that when he starts, quote, practicing, he starts with like 45 or 50 and then works up.
20 in 90 seconds is ridiculous.
Well, it's all about form. It's what I have to say about yesterday is I was surprised it looked like only one participant from football staff, fraternity, sorority, all that stuff. Only one took his method of the dip and the two at a time. Like, when you've got the goat that is showing you and you can see video on the correct form, why are we just taking it and trying to eat it normally? Like, let's get in there. Let's try to copy him in some regard. And that's at least going to give you a better chance. There's a reason he's doing it like he's doing it.
I think part of it could be that it's a pretty violent internal struggle between you and your body there. I mean, you could practice a left tackle's technique in the SEC, but that's not going to make it any less easier if you get out there and have to block one. The body shake where you jump up and down, like they're shaking their body like a snake to get the food to go down quicker. That seems easier said than done. I don't know if I could fully convince myself to dip the hot dogs in water either. I guess if I was really trying to go for it and win the thing, I would probably just take exactly what Chestnut did and try to emulate it. But part of it's just got to be the buy-in of, do I really want to commit myself to this much?
So, again, we'll switch over because I'm sure Neil and I will discuss some of the Grove Bowl stuff as the week goes on. We're back in live in the studio on Wednesday. So, from a baseball standpoint, Ole Miss, again, they're sitting 1-1 right now. I have no idea how this game is going to go on Sunday because it has not happened yet. Mike Bianco got ejected last night. They come back. They score two in the 12th to win 10-9 and break the losing streaks, break the skid that they were currently on. They still didn't play good baseball for eight innings, but they did play tough. They did at least come back. They scored the four in the eighth. They showed some pulse. They showed some toughness, some fight that Mike had been kind of preaching and begging for over the course of the last few weeks as they had lost a lot of games at that point. And, you know, what kind of preempted this conversation that we're about to have is it's all under the guise of if this thing continues as it is sitting. Ole Miss right now, 4-10 in the SEC, one game away from the halfway point. And their RPI is okay. Their RPI is around 30 last time I looked, but the record's not. I mean, they're 19-16. They are, again, 4-10, which do the math. Even let's give them a win today for the sake of the conversation, because anything less than that would even be more so to what I'm about to say. That's 5-10 at the break, and that would require 8-7 the rest of the way to even get back into any type of postseason conversation at 13-17. Their RPI is in shape for 13-17. Their record is not in shape for 13-17. So, again, that was the bare minimum if you're going to make the postseason out of the SEC is 13-17. If Ole Miss does not make it to that point, that is two straight years of bad regular seasons. That is 6-24 last year. I mean, at this moment right now, Ole Miss is doing the math, 6-10, 24-10. They are 10-34 in the last 44 SEC games. They are 7-25 in their last 32 home games. Oh, sorry, 7-20 in their last 27 SEC home games at this point. So, the numbers are where they are, and it brings up a lot of contract talk. It brings out a ton of what do you do if it continues? Because if it doesn't continue and they don't want to run, I'm just getting all these caveats out of the way. It's like that episode. It's like the scene in A Few Good Men where you go, hey, if you'll admit all these things, then I'll admit all these things, and we can all save ourselves time here. So that's what I'm doing, is I'm pointing out that if this becomes a moot point, then it's a moot point. But the conversation that we're having is absent of that with anything fewer than 13 wins in league play at a bare minimum. And it's buyout. It's what do you do from a straight program standpoint? It's where is this program sitting right now? It's all those questions that the fans are asking, and I understand why they're asking it. It makes complete sense at this point. So I'll open it up here before I go through some of it. Where do you sort of sit, Brian, on an overall, Mike, having this contract, having this buyout that I'll explain in a second as far as where this thing is from a straight money and terms standpoint. But when you look at the overall health of this program, what are the two or three things that you see?
I see several misses across the board in recruiting and evaluation that have maybe expedited this fall. That's also coincided with the fact that everything kind of changed from a recruiting perspective with NIL and the portal and all of those things. It's weird. Ole Miss's national championship run also kind of coincides with all of this. This is all happening at the same time. Like the first real portal window or the first real the year the portal became really a thing in college baseball was actually the year they won the national title. I know they had it before the year before, but it was new, wasn't heavily as utilized. And so all this has happened at once. And, you know, you could go through their portal additions and who they've added and who they've lost in the portal. And I don't know what that grade comes out to be, but I certainly don't think it's an A+. I don't think they've capitalized on the portal like Lane Kiffin has done in football. And I think the fact that you have guys like JT Quinn and Grayson Saunier who have not become like anchors in the weekend rotation like you thought they would have expedited this fall. And so I think it results in you have a lot of pieces that in part, like in moments are okay. Like Andrew Fisher, pretty good hitter. Jackson Ross at times this year looked like a pretty good hitter. But no real core, no identity, and a team that doesn't really do anything well and can't have one thing or one day or one pitcher that they really lean on to that being their biggest punch toward winning a series. They just don't do anything consistently well. And not quite sure how we got to that point, but that's kind of what I watch. Even last night, they won a game for the first time in however many weeks in the SEC play. And it was still a tough watch. I had trouble watching to the end. It was just not that enjoyable, if I'm being completely honest.
G&M Pharmacy in Oxford will help you out with that. They are on South Lamar in Oxford. That's 662-236-2222. Also in Holly Springs with Tyson Drugs. They deliver locally in the Oxford area in the Upper Med Scene. If your prescription is the same day each month, take care of you in that way. It's also easy to transfer your medications. Make one phone call. They take care of the rest. So again, whether that's in Holly Springs with Tyson Drugs or G&M in Oxford, that's 662-236-2222.
We're also brought to you by our friends at Comer Heating and Air, Southern Air Conditioning and Heating, different names, but same great people, products, and services. If you live in Oxford, Tupelo, Batesville, the surrounding area, call Comer, 662-801-1777. If you live in Hernando, Memphis, or the surrounding area, call Southern, 662-429-4429. Are you retiring soon? How long should you wait to take Social Security? What accounts should you pull from first? These are just some of the questions that can only be answered with the personalized retirement income plan. Andrew Sego, Sego Wealth Management, specializes in helping folks just like you come up with their retirement game plan. Whether you meet at his office in Collierville or prefer Zoom from anywhere, schedule a free discovery meeting and see what they can do for you. It's rebelsretire.com. Coming up this weekend for the Grove Bowl stuff or for the baseball series or both, stop by the College Corner. It is in Oxford, right off of Sisk Avenue in the Oxford Commons. More than 4,000 square feet of the best Rebel gear. Plenty of parking available. Their staff is going to have you in and out, ready for Vaught Hemingway, ready for Swayze in no time. Also, two locations in the Jackson area, and you can check out their website as well. It's collegecornerstore.com. Call Argent Welts 401k Advisory Services team today, and they'll conduct a complimentary no-obligation benchmarking and analysis of your current 401k plan. Mention that you heard about Argent Wealth on the podcast, and you'll get 10% off of your first year's fees. We're also brought to you by John Edwards Regency Travel Incorporated in Memphis. Get in touch with John if you're trying to make a special trip, one that creates a lifetime of unique memories. Just give him some parameters, give him a budget that's really important, and then let him give you some options that you're probably not going to find on your own. And no, you don't have to live in or near Memphis to take advantage of his services. 901-494-3387 or send him an email, jedwards@regencytravel.net.
The roster they put out there yesterday had some, and I'm using kind of in air quotes, homegrown people, more than the typical roster that they have used at times this season. But there's a difference in guys that recruited out of high school that you're playing and guys who are leaders or have been in the program for a minute that sort of set a standard. And it's something that I think is very relevant here as we talk about the success, failure, health, or lack of health of this program, is that I think people, and I mentioned this a little bit last week, but I'm just going to kind of reiterate it real quick, is I think people misinterpret Mike has adapted to the portal versus the portal being successful creates team success. Those are two different things.
Yes.
Ole Miss has absolutely embraced the transfer portal. They're not shy about it. They're not doing the Dabo Swinney thing where, hey, no, we don't go into the portal. That's not how you build a roster. That's not whatsoever what's happened. Ole Miss spent seven figures in the transfer portal last year. That's in the top 15 in the country. It's probably in the top 10 in the country. Now, is it Tennessee, Texas A&M, Florida? No, but that is the price of poker, and that's the life you live right now. So it's not about embracing the portal. It's about two things. It's embracing the portal and doing it well. Doing it well is a whole different thing because that factors in personalities, especially in baseball with so much downtime, so many games, so much ability to hype up, and then the evaluation of them as a player. Because Andrew Fisher and to a lesser extent Luke Hill were the only two where you had like kind of an apples-to-apples comparison of, hey, ACC player, as a freshman, here's his numbers, here's how it probably translates. But the ability to figure out, hey, that kid was in the American, or that kid was in the SoCon, or that kid was going to whatever, how does his swing and his play and his demeanor factor into the SEC? Because with a portal guy, you need him to help immediately. That's not about next year. It's not about development down the road. And that's where Ole Miss has failed in so many ways is, look, Treyson Hughes has done a good job defensively, but he came in as a preseason All-American who hit 11 home runs last year at Mercer. Treyson Hughes has zero home runs right now at Ole Miss. Zero. The power did not translate at all. Ethan Groff has not been able to replicate hitting almost 400 at Tulane his last year with the Green Wave in the American. It hasn't moved to the SEC in that same way. Luke Hill has struggled defensively. He's not been very good offensively for most of the year. And that's a guy that Mike had penciled in as the leadoff hitter to start the season. So you've got those things where guys just simply have not translated, and that's the key to being successful or unsuccessful with the portal. It's where Lane Kiffin got so much better and learned from his mistakes from 22 to 23. Ole Miss bombed 8-5 in football in 2022, and a lot of that was because of the way the portal just simply did not mesh. Last year, from the very beginning, Lane goes, hey, I like these guys. They're bought in. They're with us. Like, that was something he personally made a point to say is, look, I don't know how they're going to do when adversity hits, but I like them. We got dudes that we really like inside this program. And that's just been something that when those two things, that has not been there. And that brings up the other point, which is Ole Miss's struggles right now are not about the transfer portal. They're about development inside your program with kids that you sign and are homegrown. A little bit of injuries, but I'm just not going down the injury road too much because Hunter Elliott had surgery more than a year ago, or right at a year ago. It's not like you didn't know that was coming. That's been a two-year thing almost at this point. And then second, or it's a two-season thing at this point. And then Xavier Rebus, look, that was a huge blow. But, I mean, you look at Arkansas, they've lost their Friday guy several years in a row. And that just happens in today's world of velocity and injuries and where we are with spin rates and torque and all those things. But you're not getting anything out of Quinn, not getting anything out of Saulnier, as you said. From a position player standpoint, you're playing some freshmen a little bit, sophomores sporadically, but it's not like you got those two dudes in the infield that are my guys. Because, look, McCanson and Chotnier are gone. It's not like, hey, this is whatever, because it's so important when guys come into a program with the portal, with whatever, with freshmen even, and you look to three or four and go, hey, we're going to tell you the culture, the standard, this is what we're about. We're going to teach you, and then you take that and you move on from there and you do that. And when you look at Ole Miss, where does that come from? Because, you know, look, Reagan Burford, I'm not making fun of him at all, but he's a captain, but he doesn't play. He's not a guy who's been an everyday player at any point in his career. So you're not listening to him the way you would have listened to Tyler Keenan in year three, or Jacob Gonzalez, even though I know it wasn't his personality, but that kind of thing. And then you've got Mason Nichols and Mallets and those people, but they're pitchers. It's different. They're not out there every day. They're not with you in the same way from a pitcher position player standpoint. Ole Miss has not done a good enough job developing elite recruits into elite players, period, full stop, with a bullet. That's the biggest problem. And then two, they don't have enough position players with experience to have roles to set and develop and get that thing done. In 2021, why did Ole Miss football do so well with transfers and all that kind of stuff? Because Sam Williams and Matt Corral developed a standard for guys who had been in the program on offense and defense, and everybody followed along with that. That's what happened. And in 24, Jackson Dart is committed. He is the face of the program. It's his program. So when some dude comes in the portal next week and then ends up at Ole Miss, hey, he's coming into a complete developed structure of this is how we do things. I get that we've got players from all over the country that have done it different ways. Get on board. This is it. And when I look at it, it's that. It's really a baffling thing as we transition into the actual money in terms of this, is that for years, this is what Ole Miss did pretty well. Ole Miss should be better in the portal era than the scholarship era. Because with scholarship era, you were at 11.7 and peace. That was it. There was no lottery. Now you can spend, you can have seven figures of NIL. You know, is it Bakich related somewhat? But I mean, I point out Clemson. Clemson didn't spend six figures in the portal last year. Ole Miss spent seven figures in the portal last year, and Clemson's number two in the country as of this conversation. And I get that's an anomaly. I get it's an outlier, but I'm just kind of proving a point. You know, there are teams that are mid-majors that are ranked in the top 25. They didn't spend $1 million. This is about development. It's about knowing what you got, and it's about doing it well. And it's something that created a hallmark for all those seasons, and it's what slipped. It's where Ole Miss has struggled as this thing moves forward. So, you know, look, it's complicated, but in some ways it's not. When you struggle with putting the right portal pieces in and then not having the infrastructure to greet them and get them acclimated, and you're not necessarily developing the high school freshmen the way you need to, this thing does spiral into a situation that puts you where you're, you know, 6-24 and now 4-10.
Yeah, the last part I thought summed up really well was just the portal guys with the lack of infrastructure around them, really just both from a cohesion and locker room and chemistry standpoint, but also the production. I mean, you're right. It's not a portal issue. I mean, Andrew Fisher has been arguably the team's best hitter this year. Liam Doyle has at least been in the rotation the longest. That's a transfer guy. You know, their team is as a whole, scattered across the outfield is littered with portal guys. But there was no Tyler Keenan or Jacob Gonzalez or Tim Elko that you're adding them to. They weren't complementary pieces. They were going to have to become the core of the lineup despite being newcomers and not being there before. There's just, again, I don't know how they got to the point where they didn't really have an answer at shortstop. They didn't really have an answer at second base or first base. It seemed like scattered across the infield except for catcher, if you want to count that. And that hasn't even worked out. They didn't seemingly have any answers with guys that they had recruited out of high school and were homegrown talent. Kind of the same thing on the mound, but I guess you give them a little bit of a break with the Rivas and the Hunter Elliott thing, even though I know Rivas was a transfer, but you're right. And then it's not only that, it's probably why we've seen them. I mean, they won 2 out of 3 against South Carolina, and I thought they played pretty well. Then they get walloped twice against Tennessee, and they kind of tucked their tail ever since, and they haven't responded very well. It's why they played tight at Hawaii, or examples like that, where when things have gotten bad, they haven't really come back with their best punch. And I think part of that comes from the infrastructure part, the leadership and the locker room aspect of it. I remember, I think you'd mentioned after one of the Kentucky losses that they had a players-only meeting. And when I saw you put that out, my first reaction was, well, why? Who's leading that? And who's gonna lead that? And what effect is that going to have? Who's talking in that meeting and who's going to be listening? There's no leadership there. You're right. I mean, Morrell and Burford are the captains because they're the two players that have just been in the program the longest. It was kind of by default. And that's not a slight on them or anything against them as people. It's just it's a reflection of the situation. And I don't know how that gets fixed in the time period that it needs to get fixed. Maybe you can just, build that infrastructure quickly out of the high school ranks in one class in 1 year and it all changed. But it's certainly trending in a troubling direction, and it's hard to see how that changes by next year.
And this is not even a critical comment to Mike Bianco, but 24 years is just a really long time.
Yeah.
Like, in today's world, I mean, think about that. He's been at Ole Miss almost twice as long as Cal was at Kentucky.
Which is nuts to think about. I mean,
like, that's the situation of that. I mean, like you just do the terms in that way, and it literally is twice as long as Cal.
Doesn't happen often. Where do you know? I mean, this is the kind of stuff I feel like you always know off the top of your head. What longest tenured coach in college baseball? Where is he ranking right now?
Definitely top. I mean, if it's talking about Power Five, I mean, it's probably top five. I'm assuming off the top of my head, number one is Danny Hall at Georgia Tech. I think he's been there probably since the mid 90s, maybe a little earlier. But I mean, it's somewhere in there. I mean, he's been the longest tenured in the SEC for a while now because he's 2 years ahead of Corbin and Dave Van Horn, who were also on his heels from a win-loss record. Corbin is actually ahead now. He caught him at the end of last year, and Dave Van Horn is about 30 wins shy of him at this point also. So yeah, I know it's really high up there. I mean, it's just freaking hard. That's the point, is that it's a credit to Mike, but it also is one of those deals where I get a little frustrated when somebody's like, hey, you owe this to somebody or do whatever. You don't owe anybody anything in today's world of college athletics because here's just the truth. I mean, look, you can be building and developing. I'm not saying you should have this quick hook and you shouldn't have any loyalty. That's not my point. But my point is, for the most part, a program is either climbing or falling. There's very little that's stagnant at this point. And that doesn't mean you run somebody out immediately when it falls. That's not what I'm saying at all. But what I am saying is, when something is falling, you need to have an answer and a way to fix it. And look, that's not a conversation for me. That's not a conversation for any media member. But it is a conversation that Keith Carter has to have with Mike, is that if this thing moves forward in the direction that it's currently going. Like, that's the key. Mike said it yesterday. I mean, Mike last night, he was talking about something else. But he gave a comment that was, we haven't had a skid like this in 24 years. And that is a credit to you, but it also means, hey, what is going on that you're doing something for the first time in 24 years in a negative way? And I think that's the catch here. So, I mean, look, there is just kind of a longevity situation of, like, where things are sitting, what's going on, and what this looks like moving forward. Because, Mike's only been in real danger 2 or 3 times, but he was in incredible danger, which is where I'm going in a second, for that 2022 season. They end up winning a national title. And it is the... it's the part of the entire conversation that I find so compelling, because when you look at it, that 2022 season gives everyone imaginable what they want and wherever they sit on the conversation. if you want Mike Bianco gone, you go, ah, it was 14-16, but they were 7-14. They were awful for 5 weeks. They shouldn't have gotten in. NC State should have gotten in. Keith was firing Mike on that Monday after the SEC tournament was over. It was done. He got saved. He got lucky, blah, 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 blah. And you're not wrong. But then you also go, hey, that was a team that was number one in the country earlier in the year. They did get in. They got back to 14-16, which is a very respectable record inside the SEC. They didn't go 10-20. They had to sweep LSU to do it. It wasn't like it was chopped liver there late in the year. They had been really good the years prior to that. There was no sign that, from a program standpoint, which is I think is an important part of this I'm going to get to in a second, that they were falling off the table prior to 2022. And then they go on a run and win the national title, and he gets the ring, and you celebrate him and pay him for that. Also true. So finding the middle and what's the most realistic thing, if it was a good thing, a bad thing, where you stand on that. I mean, it's when people are emotional, a lot of times they don't necessarily look at all sides of it. But to me, it's a little more complicated, Brian. It's not really an easy thing on whether it was right, wrong, or indifferent. There's a little right and a little wrong in this.
Yeah, I think to your point about you can't, like, things are very rarely stagnant in this current portal age. It's not the fact that you can't have loyalty. You can't afford to be more patient simply out of goodwill for what the person has done in the previous decade or the previous 5 or 6 years, because we live in such an entirely different world, in such an entirely different ecosystem than we did even just 3-4 years ago. So it is complicated, right? Because this is now, assuming this continues to trend the way we think it is, 3 really disappointing regular seasons in a row. And yes, they rectified it in 2022, but even at the time, you couldn't really sense anything that was going to happen in 2023 and how 2024 has gone so far. But there was a portion, even at the time, that made me wonder, like, how is this remembered? If they continue to build off this, then I guess it just is what it is. But there's a part of me that always wonders, like, is this ever going to come back to be one of those things where people say, yeah, where they just got hot for 7 or 8 weeks. And that's kind of what you're seeing now that the last 2 seasons have gone the way they've gone. And so I don't know. It is a complicated situation. I don't really have the answers of what is fair and what isn't when you're judging and grading Mike Bianco on the arc of the last 3 to 4 years. I mean, I made this point to Colin, too, a couple weeks ago. What's crazy that nobody talks about is entering that 2022 season, he was kind of public enemy number one amongst the fan base because of the whole going and flirting with LSU thing. Like, is that factored into this at all? I don't think so, but it's another crazy year that happened before that. And so much has happened after that you don't even really mention that. And that was a big deal at the time. People were furious about how that played out in like 12 months.
That went away so much faster than you would think.
I would have never have anticipated, would have thought that. But I guess that's what winning a national title does. I guess that's what getting red hot for 6 weeks or 5 weeks does. It erases a lot of things. And even more so with them losing 30 of their last 44 SEC games, that national title and what they did for those 6 weeks is still making a pretty horrible run of baseball still murky as to what's fair and what's not.
The 2023 season, going 6-24, falling off the wagon in a way that Mike had never done. Again, Mike had gone 14 and 16 or better in every season except one since 2001 prior to last year. And that was 13-17. That was 13-17 in 2011 when they actually missed winning the West by one game. 14-16 would have won the West. So he had never, I mean, I guess here's my point, is if last year's team, in a hypothetical world, had gone 16-14 and stabilized things and whatnot, we wouldn't go, hey, that 2022 team just got hot for a few weeks. We would go, hey, that 2022 team fell apart for a few weeks but was good. And you wouldn't need to change any result whatsoever. You would just go, hey, they were number one in the country. They won a national title. But in the middle of the year, he didn't figure out the pitching, but you know what Mike always does? He figures out the pitching, and eventually he did, and DeLucia and Elliott, and rah, rah, rah. That's what you do. But instead, they go 6-24, and you look back and go, didn't really have any pitching. And in 21, Doug kind of saved them a little bit, and this happened, and this happened, and you start getting down this dovetail, and it's, again, don't take this as me defending Mike. That's not what I'm doing. I'm more just the psychology of the whole thing, because I'll get to it. I kind of buried the lead. Mike is on a contract where when this season is over, he's still going to have 4 years remaining. He signed a 6-year contract at the end of the 2022 season when he won a national title. It was deserved in a way because of the national title. Frankly, I think it was a longevity award in some ways because he's had such a program on all the things that they've done over the course of 24 years. And it also was a contract that in some ways doesn't make sense. And I think all those things are factored into this. At the time, his contract was for $1.625 million annually, 6 years. Maybe there's some small bumps and increments. I don't know. Not the point of the conversation. You put four behind the state. You put two on foundation rollovers, which they do with Beard, Kiffin, Bianco. That's not abnormal. And again, I do not know. Let me make this very clear. I do not know Mike Bianco's buyout work because I have not seen it on a piece of paper. It's hidden behind the foundation. I don't know. Maybe his is structured differently than everyone else's. However, if it follows the way that Kermit's was and other coaches have been and the way that we understand that Ole Miss does contracts, then his buyout at the end of this season is give or take between $4 and $4.5 million. Again, if I'm wrong, I apologize. Don't take that to the bank. But from what I'm aware of, following other structures, it would be somewhere in that number. That is a hellaciously large amount of money for a baseball coach to fire them and get rid of them and move on.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
That can be true. It's also completely true that it is not sustainable to go 6-24. And if this season is 10 or fewer wins, or maybe 11, or wherever you have your arbitrary cutoff, and you move forward going, nope, this program's healthy and it's making sense and they're going to win next year. That's just as foolhardy the other way at that point. So when Keith made this decision, because on message board, social media, a lot of people talking about, hey, this was really, really dumb. What do you do? Let's look at where this was sitting. So we all know about the 2022 season. We've talked about that at length and ad nauseum. And again, I think 2023 changed the tone of that in either direction. But in 2022, at the moment, they win the title, everybody's euphoric, and it felt like they had survived and gotten back to 14. At the time, it felt like, hey, it took forever, and it was really close, but you did what you always do, which is have an okay enough regular season. But look what it was coming off of, too. 2021, they went 18-12 in the SEC. They were good. They're probably an Omaha team without, you know, if Gunnar Hoglund stays healthy. I mean, he gets hurt. They still find a way to get to the Super Regional. They lose game three in Arizona, all that stuff. 2020, COVID year. People think they were going to be really, really good. They were number two in the country when the season ended. They were 17-1. They had won 17 games in a row, all that stuff there in 2020. 2019, they got to a Super Regional. They lost game three in Arkansas. They played well, and at that moment in 19, they were riding Hoglund and Nikhazy and the young guns that were going to lead them to glory coming up in the, you know, after that. In 2018, they were a national seed. They lost to Tennessee Tech. We've talked a ton about Black Monday, but they were a good team. That was a really good regular season team. It was one of the best three regular season teams that happened in the Mike era. 17, it was all the new kids that you were waiting on, Dillard and Kessinger and Rollison and all those dudes to blow up and get older and go win a bunch of games, which is what they did. And then prior to that, Mike had a couple of his best coaching jobs in 15 and 16 with rosters that weren't that talented. but he got 15 to the postseason, even though they bombed. And then 16, they hosted a regional and bombed in the postseason. They lost to Utah and Tulane and went 0-2 in that regional. So it
would have been an extra seat.
Yeah. I'm focusing this in this way to say, at the moment, Keith Carter had one issue with Mike Bianco, and it's that he did not win in the postseason, and he was going to fire Mike Bianco because of his lack of success in the postseason. Mike fixed that in 2022, obviously. They went 10-1 and won a national title. So, again, I'm not only positive, I got something else in a second. But when we take out some of the hindsight, I understand why Keith gave Mike a very lucrative contract in that moment at 2022, because none of us, you could say, no, I saw 2022 and it was a sign they were going to suck next year. And maybe you're right, maybe you're a soothsayer. But I do get at that moment why history did not suggest that we were going to be in the place we're at right now talking about this program.
Yeah, I don't think there's really any sort of reasonable way you could have taken 2022 as a sign as to what's to come in 2023, because there are so many different factors. I mean, you couldn't have predicted the pitching injuries they were going to have in 2023, namely Hunter Elliott, Josh Mallett, among others, and then the way that year just played out. They just didn't have enough arms to get outs late in games. But yes, it's not only that he fixed the one gripe that Keith had at the time, which is winning in the regular season. He won the whole damn thing. I mean, he'd have been back, obviously, if they'd have just gone to Omaha. My question, actually, and I don't know if this actually pertains to the overall point you're trying to make, but it's an interesting one when you talk about the contract he received and everything that happened afterward. What if Ole Miss had gotten to Game 3 of a Super in Hattiesburg and lost it? What happens then in 22? Is he just back and they roll it? Do they roll it over? What happens there?
I don't know. I think Mike would have been fired had he not won the regional in Coral Gables.
Sure.
And I think had he not won the Super Regional, it would have been the most agonizing, difficult decision of Keith Carter's life. I do not know. Like, because I look, I mean, I've literally written a book about it. Keith had went to the doctor multiple times. He was struggling with the decision. He did not want to fire Mike. He didn't know what to do. It was a very complicated thing. And that dude was nervous as hell in Hattiesburg. And it was, hey, if you get back to Omaha, we can stop this. This is not what I want to do. This is not whatsoever. I mean, he was pacing. He was over my shoulder. He went in the TV or the radio booth for a little while. I mean, Keith was long tail cat room rocking chairs for those 2 days there in Hattiesburg. So, look, my gut is that he still would have fired him, but it is completely a gut. I do not have that source in any way. Keith has not told me that, has not intimated that. But my guess is the problem was not getting to Super Regionals. They got to Super Regionals 3 years in a row at that point. The problem was getting back to the College World Series, because at that moment, Mike was 1-for-9 in games to get to the College World Series. I think that's right. I think he was 1-9, either 1-9 or 1-9, I forget which, to get to the College World Series at that juncture. Okay. You paid him $1.625 million, second highest salary in the country, only behind Tim Corbin. He deserved that. I have no problem with that. But here's where I think there was a misstep. Is you have to factor everything in. And they did go 14-16 and get a little lucky. You dealt with the LSU stuff the year before. You didn't like the direction of the program from a postseason standpoint right before that to get rid of the coach. Nobody was trying to hire Mike. My criticism with the contract is not the salary. It's the length. Is why a 6-year deal?
Him from?
Why not a 4-year deal? Why that at that point? Like, it's more of that. Like, I even would be better with, and maybe that's what this was, overpaying from a salary standpoint, because I think salary is deserved off performance. But there's the handicap that comes with that 6-year deal. Again, if my numbers are right, this is a completely moot point. If my buyout numbers are wrong, and Keith's listening to this right now going, you idiot, that's not what we're doing. And oh, okay, I get it. I'm sorry. Let me know. I mean, send a carrier pigeon and I'll apologize. But it's the length of the deal. If the length of the deal is indicative of the buyout in any way, that's the problem. Because if you only had 2 years left right now, or even, I mean, I don't think you would have rolled him over, but you know what I mean? Like, you had, at the end of the year, you had 2 years remaining. Well, that's a different scenario right there. Even three, that you could go, hey, you know, how do you manage this? What do you do? Because it's just, it is like the worst possible scenario. You have potentially this really large buyout, and you're, and again, they have their reasons. I've talked to Keith about this. They're doing it because you can do it right now, and in 10 years, you'll be glad you did it. It's also on the heels of announcing this expansion to Swayze Field with the extra premium seating and the 20-ish million dollar price tag, all those things. It's just a really weird deal when it's, hey, potentially can't buy out a coach if that's the decision you want to make as an administration or an athletic director. But at the same time, we're going to add 450 seats in the plaza for, again, 20, 22, 24 million, whatever the number is.
So is the lesson learned here, no matter, again, assuming we're correct and you're correct with your estimations on the buyout and it being intention of the league, we just talked about at the top of this, things are very rarely stagnant. You're either going up or down in as a program in this modern era of college athletics. Is the lesson now, like, maybe never do these long-term deals no matter what you just won or what happened? I mean, I get it. You win a national championship in football. Probably give that guy several-year contract, several-year extension. But I just wonder if this will cause some sort of correction in how not only Ole Miss, but you just see across the country in whatever sport, people doing contracts of, you know, we'll pay you a bunch of money up front, but let's not lock ourselves into a 4 or 5 year thing because things can change so quickly. I mean, hindsight is 2020, but I'm just curious if there's any sort of change in that regard, because like you mentioned, that would have simplified what is now a pretty complex situation as this thing continues to trend in a downward direction.
Prime Shrimp, primeshrimp.com. It is coming a dozen. It's good. It's great for lunch, great for dinner, great for protein snacks. They make it easy on you. They ship directly to your door. A lot of different flavors, everything from their, they got their spicy Louisiana boil. They got the New Orleans style barbecue. It's their best seller. The signature is one of my favorites. You got full meals in a bag like the French Quarter Alfredo, the garlic herb butter, lemon cracked pepper, and more. All those, soy ginger is the newest option. Use code Archie, 25% off when you buy 5 pouches or more. Stock up on your favorites. Try a little of everything. Again, that is primeshrimp.com. That is code RG for 25% off.
Oxford's newest Greek restaurant on the square, Opa, is the perfect place to plan your fabulous food, craft libation party, company dinner, festive party event. No pear salad on the menu. No bananas drenched in mayo. Just good food. And great craft libations. They can accommodate up to 200 guests. Stop by if you're coming in this weekend, or if you're thinking about catering or booking information, contact Jeannie, 601-421-7147. Podcast brought to you by Service Specialist Staffing and Recruiting Agency. Again, if you're looking for a job, they can help you, and it's free for you. If your company is looking to hire quality, hard-to-find talent, you don't pay until you hire someone that they sent to you. In other words, you've got nothing to lose. Give Will, Sydney, or Kelsey a call at 601-573-9242, or check out their new and improved website, servicespecialistltd.com. Get the beautiful and healthy smile you deserve at Corinth Dental. Dr. Bubba McQueen, Dr. Jenny Beth Hendrick are devoted to restoring and enhancing the natural beauty of your smile using conservative state-of-the-art procedures that will result in a beautiful, long-lasting smile. From routine checkups to advanced treatment, including implants and Invisalign, Corinth Dental is here to help you achieve your smile goals. So schedule your appointment today. Take the first step toward a better version of yourself at CorinthDental.com. Are you a displaced corporate executive wanting to put your career in your own hands? Are you an experienced entrepreneur looking to diversify? Either way, Andy Ludeke can help. He owns multiple franchises and businesses. He uses his expertise to help others find their American dream through a very thorough and free consultation process. So call Andy. Put your life and your career in your own hands. It's 100% free. You got nothing to lose. It's Andy at MyPerfectFranchise.net or 404-973-9901.
When you look back through, my point with it is, yeah, because when you look back through how many coaches have survived two in a row like this, again, if it continues to go this way and survived, and what does that look like as it's been so far? Because, like, I think it's a bigger conversation than even Mike or buyouts or whatever. Is are these contracts in general not smart, and do you have to find some way to keep agents from winning? Because, look, I understand why agents are doing it. It makes all the sense in the world. I mean, you know, Patrick Strong was there to represent Mike Bianco, and he did a hell of a job doing that. Credit to you. Bravo. Congrats. But in general, things are so fickle. Is there any way to pull back some of that leverage in those ways? The other problem, though, is this is an emotional industry. And when you're looking at coaches and figuring out what to do and all those different things, that coach has kind of got you over the barrel a little bit because you don't want to lose him and you got to make sure you do whatever. I mean, it's just, it's kind of like the monopoly money versus how you would actually run things with as a real accountant, CFO, and a real business corporation. I mean, it's one of those deals that just simply doesn't make a lot of sense.
Does this get fixed? I mean, where does this conversation go? I mean, I know that was kind of the point of this, but not entirely. Like, where do you think this goes? Can, you know, you mentioned in 2022, Keith being nervous and thinking if you get to Omaha, this can be fixed and we can be done with this. Do you think Mike fixes it? Do you think he's given time to? Where does this go?
You've got to answer the question if you're Mike and Keith on why is the development so bad? Again, it's not the portal. If you give Ole Miss money, they can fill in spots. Like, I don't think the portal's hard. I mean, look at Arkansas basketball. Look at, again, Ole Miss football a couple years ago. It's not that. It's, hey, why does this team not have an identity? Like, why do they play? Why, you know, are they playing really tight? Are they doing some of those things? Like, why are they struggling in some of those regards? Why do they make more careless mistakes on the people? You know, you focused on throwing strikes and taking walks in the off season. Did it work? Was that the right move? Because frankly, Ole Miss is walking too many people. I mean, I was comparing Ole Miss to Missouri for a mailbag question earlier last week, and Ole Miss had walked 27 more people than Missouri had in 10 fewer innings, give or take, something like that.
Good Lord.
Now, Missouri's awful offensively, but they pitch pretty well. So it's, okay, with your resources and your talent and your recruiting rankings, why is that the case? Why is that what's going on? And then from the walk standpoint, and I don't know the answer. It's just a question I have. If you focus so much on walks in the fall, did you focus too much on it where guys stopped being aggressive in the right ways? Are they almost hunting walks because that's where an emphasis sat on, hey, if we don't walk people and we walk as a team, because that was the problem last year, we're going to fix that. But did you overcorrect? You know what I mean? Like, it takes a lot of these self-scouting things to be really honest with yourself. This goes for any coach in the country. The key is the completely untarnished honesty to go, where am I at? How am I adapting to this new era? How am I adapting to this new generation of player, recruit, kid? And look, I was working. I was trying. I thought what Ole Miss did with the TrackMan and stuff was the right move. I think it was, I mean, frankly, it was kind of genius in a way to make them focus on the strike zone as it has changed. But am I putting a roster together that makes sense with 2024 rules and the way the talent levels are? And then am I focusing on the right things from a development standpoint? I don't have the answer. I just know Ole Miss as a fan base, as a program, puts all the money in the world into it that they are capable of doing. They're trying to win at all three sports right now with football, basketball, and baseball. And what is currently going on is not working. It has fallen off to a point that's not good enough for anyone, if we're just being completely honest. And what is so difficult about the situation is that, look, I get from people, they want me to go, hey, ask Mike this, ask Mike that, why are you not asking this? The problems can't be fixed in season. The problems are about program and about accumulating talent and focusing on certain things. You know, look, Mike's pulled every in-season button as any coach would. It's not even a credit or a discredit to Mike. He's yelled at them. He's babied them. He's kept them for 30 minutes. They've had players-only meetings. I mean, the other night against State, just absolutely laid into them. I mean, that's all you can do in the moment. I mean, he was tinkering to the point last night that he played Campbell Smithwick in right field, and Campbell ended up getting on base, I guess, five times if you want to count the error. But he had never played outfield before. Mike literally told him, hey, when they hit a fly ball, just go catch it. That was the instruction. But it was just a way to try to do anything, get his bat in the lineup and see where that thing goes. So, I mean, look, you can tinker and you can try to fix it in the middle of the season, but that's not the problem. The problem is much bigger from a developmental, from a program standpoint and where this thing goes from there. So, look, I don't think there's a 100 or a 0 on what happened in 22 and why that plays out to this. I think Keith did some good things. I think the length of the contract is a problem. Again, if I'm right, I keep saying that. And it's going to create, I mean, we'll see. We're not at the halfway point. There's one more game. But, you know, even watching, and again, maybe Ole Miss beat State 19-0 today, and this looks a little less whatever because they won a series and whatnot. But even so, give them the win, 5-10. They still need 8-7 the next part. Because, look, this is a program that puts so much money into it. They have a history of winning that might build, that progress in a way that's simply better than 6-24 is not progress. It's postseason. It's get back. It's be in the conversation because that's what you're paying for. And what sucks about this on a human level is a lot like what Kyle Tucker wrote when Calipari left Kentucky, is Calipari built a legacy and then was in the midst of tearing that legacy apart. And that's what you don't want to see for Mike. That's what you don't want to see for the Ole Miss program, is that all this sweat equity and all this work and somebody who came in and had a vision and succeeded in that vision, then whether it's adapting or whatever the reasons are, that doesn't stay at that point and you outstay and outdo your welcome and all those things. It's almost kind of a more humane deal here to look at this and go, where we are and how do we get out of this and is this right or not? And that's the gist of this conversation and kind of where we are with this podcast.
Yeah, it is. I mean, maybe you mentioned all the in-season tinkering. I guess he could get thrown out every game. I don't know what that would look like in fines, and if he didn't coach the rest of the year, that might be bad. But he did get thrown out last night. That seemingly worked, so maybe he can continue to try that.
He said he was not trying to motivate, however, though.
He said he wasn't? So you're actually like, he comes back out and you can talk to him after that?
Well, the game's over. Yeah. He hasn't always done that, but he did.
I asked it that way. I know he's allowed to. I was surprised he came back out and did. If they lost, is he coming back out to talk?
No, probably not. I think it's one of those deals where they won the game. So, because he said he was watching it in the coach's locker room, and as soon as he heard Tom Hart go and the Rebels walk it off, he said, I literally took off sprinting through the hallway back out. And he was kind of expecting to meet and celebrate with his team around home plate because he didn't realize they were out in right field because of where Jackson Ross was and the way that thing ended last night. So he said, I missed that by a few minutes on where I was trying to get and where I was trying to go at that point. But, he did come back out, and he said that he let his emotions get the best of him, that he thought that he clearly should have been ejected, not just warned, and that's what happens. He said his goal was to stay on the field because he really doesn't get ejected very much compared to most managers, which is true. And he called it actually minor league to try to get emotion out of your team with an ejection. I don't know if he meant, like, we were debating this in the press box. Did he mean, like, Bush League, is it it's not the right thing to do? Or did he literally mean, like, the Wellman guy for the Braves? Like, is that something you see in minor league baseball? I don't know what his connotation of that was at that point.
Last thing on the contract, though, and I don't know if this is a good way to, like, wrap it or not, but it feels like the last thing I haven't covered or we haven't asked is, in this whole world, I mean, we were talking about it in relation to another coach's contract a couple weeks ago where it seems like all this is just fantasy land and it doesn't make any sense. Like, when you mentioned the length is a problem and whatever the buyout is a problem, is it actually, or can they just find the money and just do it and that's just is what it is? What do you think makes it such a problem?
I mean, it's not monopoly money, and you're having to figure out in every sport where you're putting money and what you're doing, because baseball isn't the sport that pays for itself with marketing rights. Right. You can do it in basketball. And you can kind of convince yourself, hey, we're in the SEC. They're going to give us some TV money. We're going to figure this thing out. We're going to do whatever. But, I mean, baseball has more of a finite budget. Mike's pretty good about handling a budget. I mean, they stay within their means to some extent. And this expansion is expensive. NIL for baseball is really expensive. I mean, there's an SEC school that's paying over almost $3.5 million for baseball NIL right now. And you look at it and go, oh, my God. I mean, how does that make sense? How do you compete with that? Because the answer is you don't. And how do you play off that at this point? And, you know, so yes, I understand that on paper, having an $8 million deficit as an overall athletic department budget is not a problem. You know, they have one right now. But Ole Miss is in a spot where, look, there are some Olympic sports that they're having to choose. I don't mean punt on them, but be more aware of where you're spending money on Olympic sports right now. Don't get over your skis. I said this last week. If you're a program that is an overall athletic program that's in the bottom few in budget, it doesn't make sense to give every coach a top half salary. The money doesn't work like that. So you have to kind of figure out where you're putting some of those eggs in your baskets. And baseball matters, but Ole Miss is spending in football to a level right now that is required and necessary and congrats, and it has changed the face of your program and your university. It is the right thing to do. But I think Keith even gave me this quote. They're $150 million budget that's spending on football like they have a $250 million budget because you give them whatever they want. I mean, Ole Miss has potentially the best coaching staff in the SEC right now. Think about that. And it's probably true from a football standpoint. And when you're doing that, not everything can do that. You're having to figure out what this looks like. So, look, can you, in a hypothetical where you wanted to move on and pay a buyout, assuming the buyout is correct, can you take money from some of the earned through the foundation for the expansion and move it? Can you do some of those things? I have no idea. I know nothing about the books in that way. But, no, it's a real amount. Just like men's basketball is still paying Kermit Davis $1.7 million a year. It's a real amount. It's just like there's a $2 million debt service on the pavilion that goes to the men and goes to the women right now every year. It's a real amount. So, no, those things do impact the budgets and the maneuvers that you have from that standpoint inside your program, and that's where this thing moves forward. So, no, I mean, it's not a nothing number. Now, it's the age-old question when it comes to what to do about a coach. Can you afford to do it, and can you afford not to do it? And baseball is in a little trickier spot because attendance is going to be affected on in person if they have another bad year next year and Mike's the coach. But ticket sales are not going to move that much because people are simply not going to lose their spot in line. They're not going to lose their tickets. They're not going to do all those things that would impact in that way. So that's why that can't determine the health of a program. In a lot of sports and a lot of schools, you can go, hey, nobody's showing up. Nobody's buying tickets. Fire everybody. The baseball doesn't work like that here. It's a mood. It's an intangible thing a little bit. It's how it changes inside your university. Because look, even last night, I don't know if you went last night or not, is people were at the game, but almost seemed frustrated to be at the game. Does that make sense? Like they showed up because they were supposed to show up and they were there and the crowd wasn't bad. I mean, sure, a lot of people left as it looked like State was pulling away. Human nature, duh, you got kids to get in bed. You got whatever you're doing. But overall, it was just kind of listless. It looked like it was almost this requirement for them to go to baseball, and that's not where you want to be.
I was there Friday, and it felt the exact same way. Maybe it had to do with the fact that Ole Miss didn't cross home plate, but people seemed pretty frustrated about the entire thing, despite it being a pretty good crowd. So, yeah, I would say that's pretty spot on, and that's certainly not where you want to be. But yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see if it continues this direction, what the crowd and the ticket sales thing looks like, because that's maybe ultimately what sways this one direction or another. Throw in the renovation. I don't know how that factors into it, but that's going to be a fascinating piece of this if this does not turn around quickly.
So again, it is 11:35 a.m. on Sunday morning as we say this, because that's very relevant to what we're talking about right now for sure to this conversation. Again, Ole Miss has had, from a football standpoint, had a hell of a weekend, Grove Bowl games, headed into portal era now. We expect Ole Miss to be active in this. It's the worst-kept secret in the world that Henry Parrish coming back to the Rebels, the running back. Got some other guys on tap as well. So, I mean, it's a big time for that. And next time Ole Miss football hits the field, Furman, for the season opener, they have kind of a progressing schedule, if you will. Some openers that are pretty easy. They'll be favored, but at least SEC games there with Kentucky and South Carolina, and then the gauntlet that will decide whether Ole Miss makes the 2024 college football playoffs, starting with at LSU, the seventh game of the season there for that one is kind of where it's at. So, again, we haven't seen the final round, but just last minute and a half here, Rippy, have you watched a lot of Masters? Have you enjoyed it? The LIV guys and the PGA guys all being back together, how's that been?
I've enjoyed the hell out of it. I watched the coverage from start to finish yesterday, and I really enjoyed it. It was a great leaderboard. Having a nice mix of a couple of the LIV guys and the top tier PGA Tour guys with Scheffler, Morikawa, Bryson, Cam Smith still kind of lurking, even though he bogeyed the last hole yesterday that felt pretty significant. I think it's been great. I thought it was a great day yesterday. With that said, Scheffler's going to ruin this for everybody because he played terrible for 12 holes yesterday. I think he dropped all the way back to maybe three back of the lead at one point. I might have that wrong. Then he pours in an eagle, and all of a sudden, despite playing terrible for 12 holes, he has a one-shot lead after 54 holes. So I don't have high hopes that this is going to be overly compelling, even though he's got what, three guys within three shots of the lead with him, just because of how machine-like he's been. But it has been very enjoyable, and I've enjoyed watching it yesterday in particular.
In 24 months, are all these guys back on one tour?
Ooh. I'll say yes, but I can't begin to tell you what that looks like. I just can't continue to believe that these top-tier players in the world, and Brooks and Bryson and Cam Smith, are going to continue to play whatever these live events are, whatever you want to call them, and basically rely on the majors to continue to play on the biggest stage in the world. And I don't think the PGA Tour has any desire for the tour to remain as vanilla as it has over the last 24 months with some of these characters and some of these personalities leaving. Seems like Yasir and the Saudis control have all the cards here. Seems like they're really in control of this thing. So I don't know what they want, but I can't see this continuing for 24 more months, even though I can't even begin to tell you how that bridge continues to come together or back together.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think that's it. I think we're all kind of hoping for the same thing, to just be able to see the guys move forward. And, you know, something that you're wanting, even though you really like the young guys and you like kind of following the come up of the different tours and players and things as they progress through the system. So it's interesting there. But again, thanks to Blue Sky for the Treadwell stuff, Hyperlux stuff from Friday. And we'll have another podcast to you on Tuesday. And then I think normal programming at least back on Wednesday, to the best of my knowledge. As again, I'm out of town working on a few things from a story standpoint with that. So for Brian, I'm Chase. Talk to you again very soon.